everyone, my name's Greg Knox, and these are the worst 8 movies ever. I'm joined on this show by Scott Priestley.
Hello.
Hey. Now, the film that we're going to talk about today is absolutely hilarious and absolutely fun. It is very, very, very gory, so if you're likely to be upset by discussion of massive, massive extreme violence, then, yeah, you may want to consider, you know, going elsewhere. Also, we're going to spoil the absolute shit out of this movie, I'm absolutely sure. So, yeah, the film we're talking about today is Riccio, The Story of Ricky, which is a Hong Kong Category 3 film. Now, Scott, do you know anything about Hong Kong Category 3?
Like back in the day, I was a big fan of Hong Kong cinema and read a lot of the magazines, and this was one of the notorious Cat 3 films that I probably read more about than actually saw of, because it was quite hard to actually see a copy of it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
No.
I'm not going to lie. So Hong Kong Category 3, it's a weird thing. So it's something I should know a lot about, but this is only one of two of those kind of films that I've absolutely seen. And most of them seem really ridiculously violent, and they all seem to have a lot of rape in them, I've noticed.
It's kind of like an over-the-topness, which makes them kind of more like a Tex Avery cartoon than... And I'm more into saying, like, seeing like the violent head explosion kind of manga-esque ones than, you know, the other kind. But it was kind of like along the lines of when there was a lot of talk about John Woo films, The Killer and Bullet, you know, films like Bullet in the Head and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you'd read the magazines like Eastern Heroes or things like that, and then there would be like articles about these films, and you'd be like, I want to see these ones because these look crazy. But they're always kind of I remember when Ricky first came out on DVD, and I kind of didn't, or video rather, I didn't really bother watching, because I thought it was kind of like a lesser film because of the way it was categorized and kind of way it was spoken about. I thought, well, it's not serious, it's not stylish, it's not John Woo. And watching it since, it's like, oh, you're so stupid, young me. Why don't you just go and watch this film, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not John Woo. No. It's not stylish at all. But what it is absolutely hilarious and incredibly violent. Incidentally, the director of this is Lam Nai Choi. I'm probably going to get a lot of these names wrong. And yeah, I mean, this is obviously his most well-known film. I don't know any other films of his. But it's interesting, like Hong Kong Category 3 to me, I don't really think of like martial arts. Mm. I think of stuff like, I don't know, Dr. Lam, The Untold Story, Men Behind the Sun. So like the really disturbing kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is very kind of blackly comedic, not really this.
Yeah, more black magic occult, kind of like you say, like realistic in a sense. More, you know, this is more very much the cartoon end of things. Just rewatching it now, I was thinking it's kind of like... if the movie was a video game, it'd be Mortal Kombat and everyone would just be doing fatalities. There's not a lot of foreplay. It's straight to the head smashing.
Yeah, this is basically Mortal Kombat if it was done as a proper movie, not like the Paul W.S. Anderson movie. Although that does, it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine.
Oh, yeah.
Mortal Kombat. But this is kind of much, much more kind of what you would think of as Mortal Kombat based on the video games alone.
Yeah, kind of Mortal Kombat mixed with a bit of Street Fighter, and there's some scenes which are kind of reminiscent of when a film takes a breather. I was kind of thinking these are like the bonus rounds, down to like the cheesy flashbacks, and even the way that they set up the four big bosses. It's
Gang of Four.
It's very video gamey.
Yeah, it basically is like a live-action video game brought to life. Mm. That's the best way of describing it. Is this the most violent, gory film ever?
Probably not.
Ooh, okay.
But only because I'm kind of... the violence is so over the top, and the gore is so over the top. It's quite funny. It's like itchy and scratchy Tom and Jerry kind of. So maybe it is, but I'm just not seeing it because I'm too busy doubled up laughing.
Yeah, Yeah. So are you saying that because the violence is so cartoonish and over the top,
yeah,
you wouldn't consider it the most violent because it's not upsetting violence? Well, yeah. Not to us, because we're massively desensitized. Yeah.
Really. If I was to see something which kind of like had a implied violence or gore, but it wasn't shown off screen, but I can tell, you know, something is happening and it's alluded to, then that can kind of be more affecting than, you know, when you're literally sticking your fist through a guy,
fisting him.
That's everything there. Your brain almost switches off because you're not filling in the blanks. So kind of in a way, it's a little bit less of like an upsetting shock and more of just like, oh wow, okay. Where are they going to go from this? I think because I made some notes to keep me on track. And I think after I'd filled in two sides of A4, I'd already written, we're only 20 minutes in because this film doesn't really so let up. Much.
I have a funny story about this film. I specifically wanted to do this film. I mean, we kind of talked about doing it anyway, but there is a cool story. So I have a bunch of friends who are kind of like me in the sense that, you know, they're happy kind of watching like really violent stuff. Doesn't really affect them. Massively desensitized.
Mm.
And I was around there and we were watching this film. We literally started watching it. And there was a guy there. So my friends, they lived with, you know, a lady and her boyfriend came over.
Right.
And, you know, he was just bumming around, waiting for her to get ready.
Maybe
something.
On a date night. Yeah.
Maybe. And then we had this film on and he's not like us.
No.
And literally in the first 5 minutes where the guy gets like falls face first on the nails right in the face. And he was like, fuck, I'm sorry, I can't watch this.
Wow.
And he walked off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we kind of scared him away. It was so funny.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good kind of like, guys, what are you watching? Oh, a kung fu film? Yeah, I like kung fu films. Oh, it's a bit gory. Yeah, I like violent films. I've seen Rambo. And then you show someone Ricky O and it's kind of like, it's the acid test, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is as to sort of your threshold of like violence, I guess.
Yeah, you're either going to walk out or you're thinking, right, I'm going nowhere for the next 90 minutes.
Yeah. Now, one of the films, having watched it this time, because I've seen it about 3 or 4 times, because it's fucking great. I love it. One of the films that it reminded me of, I don't know, the dystopian aspect of it is really kind of just, it's not really played up that much.
No.
But it does remind me a lot of RoboCop.
Sure.
Maybe in like the tone, although it's not obviously as satirical as RoboCop.
Yeah.
It's vaguely dystopian. Like the prison, it's quite clean. The production design is sort of quite minimalistic.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot there in the cells.
I like when they're driving into the prison and it's called, I think, the Prison Masculino. And it's very clean. Everyone's very the hygiene in the human rights are terrible.
Yeah.
But the hygiene is great.
Super clean.
Yeah.
You know,
the RoboCop thing is interesting because I was thinking of Running Man as well.
Yeah.
In that, even if they overthrow the structure that's set up inside the prison, they must live in a pretty awful world.
2001.
That's right, 2001 AD.
AD, yeah, fuck, oh God. If only, like, actual 2001 was like that.
Yeah.
Talking about, like, prisons have become franchise, like parking lots.
Yes.
Which is like, when did this happen? These franchise, like, car parks that are somewhere. I don't know. Do the fact you have to pay to use the car park, does that make it franchised? I don't quite get that.
And they get taken to the prison at the very beginning in a very rough looking police van that's obviously been painted recently with the lettering on the side is like so wonky. And and then they pull up and there's already like blood all over the driveway. And it's like, wow, okay. Not a great prison.
No. So much violence in this film.
Yeah.
So much of it. So as I mentioned, man falls face first onto nails.
Yeah.
Basically this tiny board of nails gets stuck in his face. Man gets his nose broken literally just before that. It's absolutely hilarious. And that's nothing.
No, that's just, like I said, it's the first, I think the first 5 minutes, a little old man who's built a train for his son because he's about to get out of prison.
This
is like a recurring theme is like, if you show a little bit of a vulnerability or it turns out you're not as bad as you really were. You'll make friends with Ricky pretty much soon after, and then you'll die.
Basically, yeah.
You know, so Ricky's like he's the best and the worst person to know in there, in that prison. But the old man, he's just made a little train for his son when he gets out. So he has a plane, a wood plane, with him. And he kind of drops it. People seem to drop stuff out of their costumes all
fall
the time.
Over.
Yeah, fall over. It's very pretty slapstick. Standard. And, the bad guy gets him and planes his face clean off.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And I've never seen that before or since.
Yeah. Yeah, because the level of violence is absolutely ridiculously absurd.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally cartoonish. I think that's the reason it doesn't really shock me, is that, yes, it is excessive, but it's, like, very, very unrealistic.
Yeah. And the other thing is there's a lot of weird stuff happens. Like, just before that, he gets his nose planed off. The prisoners are trying not to notice, so they're all going for a piss at the same time. And then when you notice that, there's like a lot of synchronized pissing in this film.
Yeah, there is, right at the start. That seems to be a thing going on, yeah.
Yeah, and when the guard comes, right, you can wash or take a shit, but you've got to do it in 15 minutes.
Yeah. So I should say that there's two versions of this film. There's the dubbed version and there's the subtitle version. Now, as a fan of Italian cinema, as you are, Mr. Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
I always try and go for the subtitle version. If it's a film you want to take seriously, you have to watch it subtitled. I mean, dubbed, unless it's kind of dubbed with the actual actors' voices, like an Argento film, you're probably all right. But yeah, you kind of want to stick to the subtitle version because, you know, it's got, you're kind of avoiding the unintentional hilarity in that sense. This is the complete opposite of that.
Totally.
So we watched it dubbed. I've watched it dubbed every time just because the dubbing just adds this layer of kind of unintentional hilarity to it, which kind of makes it even less kind of disturbing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cool blimey. And I think there's at one point one of the guards or even the assistant warden, when he's really at his wit's end because Ricky is instigating a kind of riot, and he's literally like, it's Three Stooges meets kind of like Sid James kind of levels of core, Ricky. there's a lot of that. And the guards are like really pathetic.
Oh, God, they are.
And I wrote down as like guards equal prisoners because I guess it was shot on a tight budget. And it seems to be if there's only prisoners in a scene, there's a lot of prisoners. And if there's only guards, there's a lot of guards. But their numbers kind of half when they have to fight each other. So I think there's a lot of costume changes going on.
Yeah. And everyone who's a prisoner basically has the same costume as well. Yeah. It's this very kind of minimalistic sort of black outfit.
Yeah.
You seem to have to wear. It's like trousers and like a waistcoat type thing. Yeah. And that's it. That's the same costume for everyone. So clearly, probably had quite a low costume budget.
Yeah. If you need to keep any lethal weapons, flutes, anything in your costume, they just seem to be able to have these magical recesses inside them. They can pull stuff out.
Ricky, you're right. He does somehow manage to get a flute in.
Yeah.
Without it being confiscated from him somehow. Mm-hmm. How did he manage to do that? I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Given it's a flute.
Yeah. And that guy has the old man, he kind of deserved getting his face planed off because he managed to get a wood plane out of the workshop into the bathroom. You know, if you've just made something, you don't need to keep the tools with you. So he kind of had that coming, really. And I love the way they're always like the guy who gets the wood and the nails stuck in his face. You think, well, obviously he's going to be the big bad guy.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like, right, well, I'm not tough enough, so I'm going to get a guy, Zorro, to fight him.
Yeah.
And then the Zorro guy is this huge fat dude.
Yeah.
And they describe him as recently having eaten an entire horse. Like a literal horse has been brought to the prison to feed this guy. And he's even bigger. And you're thinking, well, he's obviously going to be the new big bad guy. And it's like they keep upping the ante and guys get dispatched pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And pretty sensationally. So you're like, wow. It's kind of exciting because you never know what's coming up. You know, you think, well, surely they can't, in this fight, it's going to end like a draw and it'll be like, I'll get you later. But, you know.
I'll get you next time, gadget.
Yeah, within seconds, they're getting their heads caved in and they're guts literally ripped from their stomachs. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Ricky's a bit of a weird character in that way, in that, if I'm being critical, which I don't want to be critical in a film like this, it's ridiculous, but basically he is practically invincible.
Yes.
So at no point are you ever concerned, realistically, like, is this guy going to die? Well, clearly no.
Yes. Yeah.
Clearly no, he's never going to die, because he survives ridiculous things this film.
Yeah, because your first guy, Oscar...
I love the names in this film. So
and
funny.
Then your second guy, Zorro, and then Zorro kind of comes in and he does his speech, and I think his speech lasts longer than he does, doesn't he? Because Ricky kind of just reaches in and rips his stomach out.
Yeah.
And there's just loads of, like, stuff. That's the practical effects, the intestines are fantastic.
Yeah.
And do you think they're real intestines? Because I don't
probably.
Think, yeah, there's a lot of, I think, pig gut and...
Yeah, that's normally what they use. Like in City of the Living Dead by Lucio Fulci, there's an infamous scene involving a character literally vomiting up their insides, and that was pig intestines for that. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, there is a scene towards the end of the movie where there's like a dog sniffing around the yard. And I wrote down dog real, because the dog's real. One of the big bad guys towards the end of the film jumps out of a sewer grate, which is just magics itself there, kicks the dog in half, and then there's a shot of the dog kind of like flopping, the top half of the dog, because it's been kicked in half, flopping to the ground. And I was like, that looks kind of real. That looks really real. But I
wouldn't have thought so.
No.
There is like real animal death in one Hong Kong category free film that I've seen, but I doubt that was a real dog. Yes, we're going to kick a dog in half for real.
And literally, the dog isn't in it any time before.
Nope.
He's brought in for about 2 seconds, just patrolling the yard, and then the dog's technically on their side, right? Because it's a bad dog, and they're bad people.
It's a bad dog.
But they kick it in half. I like the going back just after he fights Zorro, he has a flashback scene, and I wrote down the oldest kid in town, but I forgot what was coming up later, but we'll get to that guy.
Because
Ricky's ridiculous. Dressed as a schoolboy.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a flashback. It's the same actor, and it's like he's clearly in like his 30s or something, pretending to be like, I've just come from school. And
Because like Ricky's ripped. He's a huge dude, and he's got like a little school uniform on. It's just like popping out of it, and it's like, wow.
He is basically like Matt Riddle level of ripped, basically, for anyone who knows who that is.
And I love the... Everything, probably because we're watching the dub as well, but the exposition when people turn up and he's just met his uncle, and he's like, oh, I'm your uncle, in the flashback.
I'm your uncle.
Hello. I'm your uncle. I've been watching you for years. Are you still, do you still have superpowers? It's fantastic.
Oh, it's fucking great. I love it so much.
The uncle, he looks like a lot like George W. Bush.
Yeah, now the uncle, he's interesting. He's the only sort of actor in this who's actually had a really, really long career. He's actually a Japanese actor. He's in sort of Harakiri and Kaidan and like actual really good films. Also in You Only Live Twice as well, and Gozu and films like that. So yeah, he's a proper actor. Well, it's like proper actors really. But yeah, he's like, oh wow, this random Japanese actor in with these Hong Kong actors and stuff like that. And yeah, his character was awesome, just cackling randomly.
There's a cut where he's asking Ricky to show him his kung fu, and he starts laughing, and it's bright daylight, and then he finishes laughing and it's cut, and obviously they come back later, but it looks as if he's just laughed all the way until it got dark. Ricky's come back.
And then after that, you get one of my favourite characters in the whole film, who's the assistant warden. I love the assistant warden so much. He's amazing. What I love is in his office, he does have what probably is, we couldn't really tell. I think it's porn. He's got all this porn in the back of his office, like literally shelves of porn. And that's it. The rest of his office is like completely spare. Barren. It's like a fucking like dryer film or something. Yeah. Like it's like you watch it order. And there's just this porn there. It's hilarious.
He's sitting in a massive diamond-shaped room, isn't he? And he's kind of got his desk, and it's pushed right up into the corner. in front of his porn stash. There's all these IKEA shelves behind him. And at first I was like, I remember him having like some like funky things like comics, and then you see there's like naked wit. Porn. He's just got loads of porn tapes. And looks a bit like he's got like a dictator's haircut.
Yeah.
He has a hook hand.
A double
hook hand. Yeah. That he can kind of pincer.
Yeah.
And he has a removable eye, which secret ability is it contains breath mints.
Yeah. Just who thought of this? Because I know it's based on a manga.
Mm.
And I'm not going to lie, I'm not a manga reader or anything like that, but I'm quite curious, like Ichi the Killer as well, that's based on a manga.
Sure.
And kind of like how similar the film is compared to the manga.
Yeah.
Like, where all these ideas come from, very random ideas.
Yeah, and I kind of think, obviously up until the Marvel thing kind of kickstarted everything, then if you think back to like superhero films of the 70s, 80s and 90s, everyone would complain about how much of the original was changed or left out. You know, for example, like Dolph Lundgren, he didn't have a Punisher skull because it was considered too comic booky, things like that, you know.
Mm.
And with Hong Kong or say Japanese adaptations, if you're not familiar with the source manga, which I've seen the style and it looks kind of Fisted and All Star.
All right.
And the characters in the film do match up pretty well to the drawings. That they kind of almost have this thing where they can't leave anything out they just don't want to like upset the readers. So whereas you might have a massive volume and there might be a whole comic about the warden and his secret stash of mints in his eye, in here it's just a little weird. Okay.
Yeah. I don't really want to be picky with this film, but yeah, I mean, from a narrative perspective, it is very kind of like they'll bring stuff up completely randomly out of the blue, like they're growing opium.
Yes.
Just like that just comes up as a thing. I was like, oh, they are now. Oh, okay. And then there's this character who's a good person who then meets Ricky and then dies. And it's like, okay, where were they for the rest of the film? Or random stuff like that. Yeah,
people kind of just walk in and say, hey, I misunderstood. Be my friend Ricky. Ricky's like, okay, that guy's going to die. He's going to cause trouble. You don't want to pick holes in it because what other films can you think of where a guy has a false eye that is full of breath mints?
Very true.
And it's fantastic. And it always makes you chuckle. And it's a great gag.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And and he's not like the strangest guy in the prison.
No,
we haven't met the strangest guy
at all.
No, he's yet to come. So just as much as they up the ante with the bad guys, they also kind of up the ante with the strange bizarreness of the characters as well. It's kind of like you'd be lucky to get a character this good in one film. this
memorable
film has, one of the things if I watch a film and I'm like, say, for example, you take the RoboCop remake.
All right, yeah.
There's no memorable bad guys in that, but every guy in the original RoboCop in the bad guys was memorable. There was, like, the slick one, there was the cool one, there was the melty one, there was the one that loved guns. And it's like, in this film, every bad guy has a gimmick. It's like the glory days of wrestling. It's like, you know, nowadays in action films, they're just like guys in pants, like, rather than wrestling. And in the old days, they had like crazy feather hats and nuts gimmicks. And
that's very true, actually.
This is like back in the days where they weren't scared to push things and go over the top and go camp and silly, but also mix it with hyper-violence, which is, I'll give that a thumbs up.
Yeah, oh, definitely. You can't beat a bit of hyper-violence, as you say. No, that's actually quite an interesting point. I hadn't really thought of that. But yeah, I think the idea is, it's Jason Bourne's fault, basically. Yes. It's the idea is, like, action heroes must be, like, everyman. Like, people must be able to relate to them in some way, forgetting that, like, what about Arnie?
Yeah.
about, like, Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah.
I mean, you had Bruce Willis. Willis was like an everyman. But yeah, the idea is it's wish fulfillment.
Sure. And just as you remember, you know, Bruce Willis in Die Hard, you remember Alan Rickman. Just as you remember, you know, Arnie in Commando, you got Bennett. And it's like,
of course.
The more crazy, the better.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I love the 80s.
Yeah, one of the warden's first kind of ways of trying to persuade Ricky to come over to his side, because he can see he's a powerful dude.
Yeah, clearly.
He's like, is by pinning his hand to the desk with his claw. So he gets Ricky pinned to the desk, and then he just repeatedly punches him in the face, shows him a picture of his girlfriend, and says, oh, I'm going to do terrible things to your girlfriend if you don't help me out. Which I'm not sure if the warden realizes at that point that the girlfriend is dead. But when Ricky kind of like smashes through the desk and escapes, he's like, oh, and I tried to be nice. It's such a good line.
Oh, dear. I love it. And then, yeah, you get a lot of really, really, really violent stuff. So you've got this character, Oscar, who's one of the Gang of Four. He basically has this knife and he cuts Ricky on the arm, but then kind of like this is where Sabu must have got the idea from to kind of fix himself. Like Ricky will literally sew himself shut.
Yes.
Like, it's fine. This is no big deal. Like, sew this giant wound on my arm shut. And just strangulation with intestines, yes, as you do.
Yeah, the fight between Oscar and Ricky is fantastic. The way he just slaps him on the back of the head and his eye pops out and pigeons come and eat him. It's like, I was watching a thing where it's saying, so like, random. You know, the way the Simpsons used to set up a joke, they used to have a joke, have a punchline, and then it would be like a third act of the joke. So it wasn't just, it was like the beats and the rhythm of the joke's fantastic. So in this, it's like, yeah, I'm going to slap him on the back of the head. And it's not just going to jar him. His eyeball's going to pop out. You'll see the eyeball pop along the floor. Pigeons are going to fly off a crucifix and then eat the eye. And it's just like... And then that's not even the finishing... That's not even, like, you know, the money shot.
Exactly.
So we must say that where they're fighting against the backdrop is, there's a guy called Andrew.
Andrew. Love it.
Who's basically... him and a bunch of the other guys have got... The henchman from is Oscar's henchman, isn't it?
Yeah,
and they've got a list of demands, and one of the things they want Oscar to do is eat shit, but literally eat shit. And when the assistant warden kind of comes across them, there's a guy kind of like, again, the magical kind of prison robes. He pulls out a massive sword. It's like a triangular shaped sword with serrated edges.
Yeah.
And they cut Andrew in the face and then stick him on a pole and then force Ricky to fight Oscar to the death.
Yeah. But, yeah, Ricky's this really weird character in that he fights and he has these superpowers, but he's kind of reluctant. He doesn't really want to use them. I think a lot of... In the film, like, he'll, I don't know, uppercut someone in the face and literally destroy, like, knock off half their head.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But he's like, no, I don't want to do this. We shouldn't be fighting. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, I don't know, just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, the way the fight of where Ricky and Oscar resolves itself, where kind of Oscar kind of, again, it's a reoccurring thing where the big bad guys, they fight and then they kind of have a respect for Ricky.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I don't want to fight you anymore. And then Oscar kind of is like, we'll die together. And his big idea is to cut his guts out and strangulate Ricky with his guts.
Yeah.
And
Fucking hell.
The assistant warden's dancing on the sidelines going, you got a lot of guts. And again, it's probably so the gift of the dub.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because I'm not sure if it would say that in the...
No, that's kind of like, how have you been doing with my balls for my SS experiment camp? Because blatantly in the Italian original, clearly he didn't say that.
No.
But like, yeah, it's clear someone's had a bit of a laugh. It's like this shit Nazi exploitation film. It's like, oh, fuck it, we'll just have him say that. His lips vaguely kind of look like that. We'll just stick that in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, God only knows. Yeah. Yeah. Did you know you could play a leaf like a flute? apparently you can do that.
I was kind of thinking, are they doing the thing where you like blow a reed of grass between your fingers and it kind of goes,
yeah.
But Ricky can play a leaf like a beautiful,
exactly,
exotic instrument. It's like an ocarina, isn't it, in his hands, at least.
Basically, yeah.
And that's when we meet Alan.
Alan.
So Alan is the, I'm right in thinking he's the nephew of Andrew.
So he's Oscar's godson or something like that. I don't know. Right. Again, sort of not really. The story isn't the reason you watch this film at all. But yeah, they. What I love is like the other prisoners. All they're there for is just to give exposition, just random exposition. Yeah. It's like, you are the son, you should take over, you should take revenge on Ricky or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, like, all they're there for is just, oh, yeah, Ricky, yeah, go Ricky, yeah. Like, they're just weedy, absolute weedy motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Like, can't stand up for themselves whatsoever. Literally, they need Ricky to do all these things for them, otherwise they'll just be screwed forever. Yeah,
that early on, there's that tracking shot, and they're all in the cells. And they're like, I don't think that guy should have died. Well, he was only on the way to help his poorly wife to the hospital. He shouldn't be in prison for accident. And he's like, okay, we get it. Yeah. The guy was incarcerated, when he maybe it wasn't, he's not an evil guy.
He's
it
a
was
victim.
Just an unfortunate, He's like the weedy guy in Oz that, gets put away.
For sure, the guy in Shawshank Redemption as well. There's always a character like that. But we get the idea.
Yeah, we get
it. You could tell they didn't need to give that level of exposition, but they did anyway.
Yeah. So
it's great.
Alan makes friends with Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Bad sign.
Yeah.
Ricky finds out that Alan has had his tongue cut out.
Yep.
And then poor old Alan tries to give Ricky a leaf to play because Ricky gives him his flute. Which is, again, it's like Ricky is like, he gets a flute out and he's like, hey, since you don't have a tongue, why don't you play the flute like this? And he plays it the worst cut. It's not even like dubbed well.
Or
they didn't, it's like you said, it's just like a kid mashing a keyboard. It's like, whoo, 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 whoo. And then he kind of throws the flute to Alan. And then there's, if any character was going to have a theme, you think maybe Ricky would have a theme, the warden would have a da-da-da-da theme, but Alan has his own theme, and he's pirouetting around, and his theme is quite a good piece of music, but obviously overlaid, and it's...
It's proper Legend of Zelda, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and you think, right, okay, so Alan is going to be in this film to the end. Because they've set it up so much, and then he kind of bumps into the three other bosses.
Yeah, so the three other kind of gang of four. So it's just the gang of three now. So you got Tarzan, who's the really big one.
Yeah, he's huge.
You got Brandon, who basically has shit hair. That seems to be his only power.
Yeah,
and you got Rogan, who interestingly the actor who plays that character is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird. So you've got this character who's male, I think supposed to be male,
yeah,
but it's played by a woman, like sort of this sort of androgynous-y woman.
Yeah, I think
it's very weird.
I think in the comics, it's drawn as like a very effeminate man, like a very beautiful man. So they think, well, it's like pantomime, isn't it? It's like the old they get the handsome prince. And but she's like a fantastic martial artist as well. So some of the fight moves when he's fighting the other three bosses are really good.
Mm.
And there's a really funny scene when one of them has to get from one end of a desk to another. So they kind of do a backflip just because they can.
Yeah.
They're very athletic. And those three guys are really good.
Yeah. So, I mean, my favourite of the three, by far, is the Tarzan. He's this really huge guy. Like, literally, he crushes a man's head just by clapping his hands together, which is quite a famous... Like, I saw that clip before I ever saw the film. It's sort of, I think it's probably the most famous clip in the whole film, to be honest. And then, he dies in an incredibly violent way in a room. He gets crushed to death, but this is after Ricky's kind of, punched his jaw off and made his fist explode into like a million pieces or something like that.
It's like the Robin Hood arrow thing, isn't it? But with fists. Whereas one fist splits the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then Tarzan makes the mistake of trying to befriend Ricky, gets his respect through combat. And he's like, you're just going to get killed now, Tarzan, because you become his mate.
Yeah. But again, it's the kind of like respect thing.
Yeah.
So, like, he saves Ricky because Ricky's going to die, and then Tarzan saves him because characterization is incredibly thin in this film, if I'm being honest. It's just like, oh, I've just decided to be good now because, well, we respect Ricky. And like the warden, the assistant warden, they're being bastards and they don't care about me, all my hard work, whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the flute guy, the guy with no tongue, Alan.
he kind of goes back to the Gang of Three and they cut his face off and skin him alive.
Yeah.
Because
all very vicious.
Yeah, it's like he might show where Ricky where the where we're growing the poppies and the opium. And after they skin him alive and he's found, then Ricky goes off and just starts burning the poppy fields. But
how did he burn? Where did he get the fire from?
And they're in massive greenhouses. The secret stash.
It's not really very secret. Yeah, it is literally just a greenhouse in the middle of the prison somewhere where, yeah, like you said, they've just set up like these poppy fields or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think is it Rogan? Is,
yeah.
Can't she's, is that the chief poppy grower? How did you find my poppies? You've ruined all my hard work.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and Ricky has a real... And it's not like... It's never established whether it's a business or they're just doing it to give it to the inmates or the warden. It's a very...
It's not really explained.
The business plan isn't...
No. I'm assuming they're selling this on the street. I think it's very thinly, and by thinly, I mean like literally like paper thin.
Yeah.
Possibly there's a link to, and this is really hilariously funny, is a flashback to how Ricky ended up in prison in the first place.
That's a great flashback.
Yeah, oh, the flashback's absolutely amazing. It's his girlfriend falling, and it's clearly a dummy.
Yeah.
And it's just literally just meow.
Yeah. And it's
splat.
The way it sets up is she's kind of almost skipping back from school with her arm full of books, a picture of innocence, and then she just turns around the corner and there's guys straight up doing heroin. Like everyone's in this park and it's like this massive heroin party, and
oh Christ,
tries to turn around and then the guy's like, oops, we've been caught. So he gives her to the boss, who is about to attack her, but she manages to escape, but in her escape she doesn't realize that she's about to run off a roof. So I thought it kind of went from Taken to kind of being Mac and Me in one scene. Because if anyone's familiar with like Mac and Me, where the kid goes off the side of the cliff in the wheelchair, just that plummeting lifeless mannequin effect. It's just, oh, help me! But yeah, it was great.
I love how in a review of Story of Ricky, you managed to bring up Mac and Me. This is a new one. That's a total new one on me.
The links are there.
Maybe, oh, yeah. Maybe they were inspired by Mac and Me. Who knows?
Yeah.
Just so much violence. Just so much violence. Lots of, basically the second half of the film is, I know, we'll get Ricky, we'll do this. This will like, we'll bury him for 7 days. Nope, fine, just he's, yeah. No ill effects whatsoever.
No food, no water.
No, somehow absolutely fine, still ripped.
Yeah. All you need is a plate of rice with an inspirational message painted on the plate.
Exactly. Yeah. As another character, like, just this random character gives Ricky food, he gets killed, and, like, we're supposed to be really upset that this character's died. It's like, why? I don't know. Don't really understand that. Yeah.
Basically, if you are nice to him and you are named... Because I think this guy's called Freddy. So if you're reading the script as an actor and you think, oh, I've got a name, okay. If you're in Ricky O, it means you're going to have about two lines before you get brutalized.
Yeah, definitely. The only bit of violence, which is weird, this kind of just shows you kind of... I don't know. I'll explain in a minute what I'm trying to say. But, like, where Ricky gets razor blades put in his mouth,
yeah,
his mouth gets gaffer tape, and then he gets punched.
Yeah.
That's actually really, really, like, very disturbing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the one thing where you're kind... Because it's very visceral.
Yeah.
And they're literally splitting out the sides of his mouth.
Yeah.
And it, yeah.
Weirdly, I think that's probably one of the only instances in the film where they do something and it's kind of realistic. Like, you can actually, as an audience member, you can kind of sort of imagine what that would be like.
You can taste the metal and it makes you kind of close your mouth.
Yeah. Like, you can't really imagine what it would be like to punch someone and have your fist punched off.
Yeah.
Or have your head half punched off, or all this kind of stuff. All this cartoony stuff. But something about that is really, really disturbing to me.
To be fed razor blades, have your mouth gaffer taped shut, and then to be slapped, because he's kind of constrained, isn't he? So his head's lashing back and forth as well. And then that's kind of gross and like say disturbing. But then as soon as the guy comes to rip the gaffer tape off, what do you think about that? He spits the razor blades out.
Yeah.
And the guy becomes like a human pincushion. And he's just like, get me my medicine.
Yeah. So that's the warden. Now,
oh,
warden, he's all right as a character. I mean, I prefer the assistant warden. The assistant warden is clearly like no match for Ricky whatsoever. He's this bumbling, foolish man with his two hooks or whatever and his porn collection. And the warden is like, well, he's a bit more serious. But like for most of the film, he's in there. He's not even really in the film for that long. He's just some guy, really. And yeah, obviously at the end, you've got the big boss battle where he kind of hulks up. And even then, that only lasts for about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He's just some big muscly man, whatever.
He's a weird... Again, maybe the comics went further into it, but he kind of gets mentioned, the warden's in Hawaii. Oh my God,
yes.
The warden's in Hawaii. And then he turns up and it's literally, he's come from a completely different film. He looks like he's... just stepped out of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, he does, or he looks like the guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark as well.
Yeah, and obviously the actor's got a very fine head of hair, which they've had to make him look like the comic character. So they've shaved like the bald top of the head, but he's got like the very thick stubble on there, and it's kind of like is you're more put off by his sartorial choices. But even weirder than that is his little sidekick.
Yeah, it's just like, I think it's meant to be. Yeah,
I was watching it again and I couldn't remember. I was like, is he just like a slightly, you know, strange little like kind of cheerleader, like a hype man? But I think at the end, he's like, get my son to safety.
Mm.
And,
you never see what happens to the son.
No.
Do you?
I think the son kind of gets away.
Yeah, that's very weird.
And he's a strange kind of man-child with, like, he's a bit like, he reminded me a bit of, like, you know, Lenny Luthor in Superman 4.
I've never actually seen Superman 4.
Well,
I should. I know I should, because of how legendarily bad it is.
So I was thinking maybe this guy is like a famous comedian and they've got him in and he's supposed to be... Because he's just irritating. He's straight up irritating. You've already got the assistant warden for wackiness. The warden is, like I say, he's
quite serious, quite straight.
He's a straight man. And this guy, and he's kind of dubbed with like a little girl's voice. And he's very la 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 la. And he's an idiot.
Yeah.
So, but he's bumbling. He's just like, oh, that's just... Because he gets a man killed, doesn't he, for tripping over the red carpet.
Yeah.
For him. And it's like, okay, enough already. This guy is, he's a bit strange and a bit unnerving, and he doesn't get his comeuppance.
No, very bizarre.
Yeah.
Obviously a ridiculously gory ending. Apparently it's so much fake blood that the actors took them 3 days to get rid of it all, basically, to wash it off themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous, over-the-top sort of death. Which I guess is befitting of a film like this, I guess.
Yeah, there's a full-on... It kicks off... the thing I like most about the riot that they have at the end, where there's the prisoners actually have their uprising, is one guy goes forward and then all the riot police just beat him up.
Oh, dear.
And then there's like a really odd like segue where it kind of... there's almost like a comedic scene where the main warden is doing ration inspection.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, why is this in here? And then one guy is scrubbing down, it's a very clean prison.
Yeah, oh,
spotless.
Yeah.
And he's moaning about the rations, they're not getting enough mince meat. So the warden grabs his arm and puts it through the mincer. And I think, it's just there just so you can, okay, they're going to have a room where there's a, and they're going to fight in this room. And there's going to be a giant mincing machine. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah, it's like Chekhov's mincing machine, really. Yeah.
But then, like, the remaining... Because obviously Tarzan gets crushed.
Yeah.
Then the two other of the big... two remaining of the big baddies turn up.
Brandon explodes.
Yeah. It kind of gets short shrift, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. One of them gets their legs ripped off, pretty much, which is... still pretty and violent.
And I think the warden shoots Brandon, doesn't he?
Yeah,
yeah, so he does. It's like, okay, you just shot one of your best fighters.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to get into those funny little lifts. There's this really weird scene where the prisoners escape, not through a regular lift, but by like Oompa Loompa sized lift.
Laundry chute type thing, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. Or maybe, yeah, or like how they deliver the dinners or the laundry, yeah, or the, like I say, like a laundry thing. And it's like, but it just looks like they're getting in really, really small lifts.
Yeah.
And Ricky gets punched by the warden as he's hulking out. And I think that's the first time you see him go through a polystyrene wall. And it's just like, yes. I remember now the polystyrene wall and how does he get rid of... I've only just watched it again.
so much happens in the film.
The big warden guy, he's hulking out, he's going crazy. Oh, yeah, Ricky picks him up above his head.
Yeah, and just chucks him into the mincing machine.
Yeah, and he's holding him down and it's like mincemeat going... And the amount of blood is pretty epic. And the amount of mincemeat is... There's a lot of mincemeat. And then he's just left with the head, which is, I think...
You love that head, don't you?
If I could own one prop from any film ever, it would be the warden's hulked out head. It's fantastic.
It is pretty cool.
Where he's wearing it as a mask, you can see the actor's teeth behind the demon teeth. And it just it makes it look even more unnerving, like he's got two rows of teeth.
It's like Troll 2, like the trolls or the goblins in like that, where is when they're supposed to be talking, you can clearly see the actors' mouths moving. Yeah. But that's just silly.
Yeah.
But yeah, this
is great. And then Ricky kind of is, right, we got to get out of here. And he does the Lucky's Dragon Punch and the wall explodes. Now... This is where it made me think of the Running Man. He's walking off into the sunset, but he's walking off into a terrible world where prisons are franchised. He's just going to get picked up by another corrupt prison, surely.
Yeah. And again, not to be like one of those nitpicky people who we know. But yeah, in theory, he could have just done that at any point and escaped.
Yes.
Really, if you think about it, really. It's like, what was stopping you from doing that literally when you got in prison?
Yeah.
Like he's
kind of bound by it. He seems to be have like a code of like I've done the crime, I'll do my time.
Yeah.
But as soon as he kills all of the people that work in the prison, it's okay to break out.
It's all right to break out at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And up until we have the flashback scene where he's learning with his uncle and he's demonstrating his kung fu. But all he's using that for is desecrating tombstones.
Yeah. Just random tombstone destruction.
And how strong is the uncle? Because he's hurling those tombstones at him like they're nothing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't use his powers. Ricky doesn't use his powers for good or justice until he gets thrown in the slammer.
Yeah. Like, he could be like this super police officer going around sort of, you know, solving all these crimes, you know, killing or beating up all these drug dealers or whatever. But no, he doesn't seem to use his powers at all in the whole... They keep mentioning in the film, like, these two years, like, after this happened, what were you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And we never really find out what he was meant to be doing.
And he's obviously protecting the guys that he knows are given some sympathy in that they bring him food or they've had worse things done to them by more evil people in the prison. But I'm thinking, he's just let all those prisoners out at the end. And none of them kind of follow him. He's like, you're free. And they're just going, yay, Ricky,
yay.
But they all kind of stay rooted to the spot. They know that the franchise is sending more guards, and it's, in a prison where you have guns that just pop out of the walls.
That's very RoboCop.
That was fantastic. But no one really wants to follow him. And I just want to see. I think there was a rumored sequel, but it doesn't really follow anything on.
Right.
Apparently, I think it was a sequel, but in name only, and it wasn't.
Okay.
None of the returning cast came back.
That's never a good sign.
No. So it's it's just fantastic. He just smashes the wall down and walks out, and everyone's kind of like,
"Hey, Ricky, you're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind." Hey,
but
Ricky.
how many really bad criminals has he let out?
Yeah, it's very true. You could be like in all sorts, like rapists, yeah. murderers, yeah. terrorists.
Exactly. You've got the one guy that you know, accidentally hit someone when he was taking his sick wife to the hospital, but yeah. law of averages, a lot of them could be in there for legitimate reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, so you don't, if you live there in that prison, then yeah, I'd like to see what the crime statistics were for the days after the heroic escape of Ricky.
Oh, dear. I couldn't ponder that. Is there anything else? We think we pretty much covered everything, really, haven't we?
Yeah.
Unless there's anything you can think of.
No, it's so enjoyable, and it's you'd be lucky to get a handful of those scenes in a film, and like you can sit through some real dross, just but people say, oh, you got to watch it for this one bit.
Mm.
And you say, oh, okay, it's worth watching for that one bit, because that was kind of cool, but the rest of the film was really boring. And this is just like a greatest hits of,
yeah.
you know, if you were to show someone the highlights of like all the death scenes, it would last a good solid half hour, wouldn't it?
Pretty much. It's like Hatchet, but better. Yeah. Is the short answer I give for this, because Hatchet, literally, I mean, Hatchet's all right. None of the Hatchet films are absolutely god-awful. You know, for whatever their merits or lack thereof, but the death scenes are clearly the best thing in it, and they're all ridiculous and over the top. And obviously you've got Kane Hodder, who's really good at being that yeah. kind of character, whereas this is kind of like, I guess, the Hong Kong version of that, but the deaths are somehow even more ridiculous.
Yeah, just the inventiveness is, you know, if you came up with even the guy with the moustache who turns into the snitch and he gets his comeuppance by literally getting his block knocked off.
Yeah, basically.
And it's like that, just seeing like the half the head skid along the floor. And again, like as it was a Cat 3, it didn't have maybe the censorship.
No, Hong Kong seems to have the most liberal censorship ever.
Yeah. And like, say it's like, you know, a Friday the 13th, film, like say part 3, would have a lot of the good stuff removed.
Yeah.
Had they done that film in Hong Kong, then you would probably be,
yeah. Yeah, it'd be very yeah. different. Well, like My Bloody Valentine's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like all the best bits, in inverted commas, it's like, nope, too violent, taking it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're really lucky in that respect that it's kind of, it's intact. And it has got this crazy vision, and it's like, even though it's like a whirl of ideas, and like you say, everything's very thinly sketched out. It's you can't watch it and still be in a bad mood after seeing it.
No, I agree. If we're rating it as a film, I would probably give it a 4 out of 5 as a traditional movie. Obviously, look, you know, you shouldn't watch this as a traditional movie. You're failing if you try and sort of rank this as like a proper, in inverted commas, movie. Because it's so fun. Even like, I mean, I remember watching this before and thinking like, okay, apart from the really violent bits, it's actually quite, you know, the bits that aren't like that are quite boring. But I didn't find that this time around, probably because I sort of knew what I was expecting. I was yeah. like, okay, great, whatever, next. So yeah, I would give it a 4 out of 5 as an actual movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad to go along that. I'd say a 4, a strong 4. It's a top end 4.
Cool.
Yeah, just because it's fun and it's doesn't take itself too seriously.
No, it really doesn't.
And it's kind of one of those films that you'll have in your collection and you'll be like, what can I watch? And then you just say, ah.
Yeah.
It kind of
kills 90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and it's a film you can sit there glued to, or a film you can half watch, a film you can have like a beer and a pizza to.
Yeah,
and it's just it's you won't regret digging it out and watching it again.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's very weird. It's like well lit. It's quite bright. It's not really dark. It's not really even depressing or anything like that. It's very cartoonish, and yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and you really get the spirit of, like, it's come from a comic book background, and you're, you know, and like, 20 minutes in, so much has happened, that could be a film.
yeah. Now, this is the interesting thing, so we're saying the film's fun.
Yeah.
as a date movie, so obviously, hey, we do this every show. If you're rating this as a bad date movie, so one would be kind of Netflix and chill, no problem whatsoever, and five would be Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
Or, like, yeah, one of those kind of similar films, like terrible date movie, date would run away, never speak to you again. How would you rate this?
I would say I'll give it a 3.
Okay.
It's not the worst thing you could show someone, but I think it's a, I wouldn't dissuade people because it's a good indicator, because they're either going to, like, say, walk out within the first 5 minutes or stick around.
Right.
And it's kind of like a good shorthand.
Yeah.
To finding out if someone's BSing you.
The guy, that I told you about earlier.
Yeah. If you're going to sit down and watch a movie and say on a date and your date said, oh yeah, I'm really, I love Hong Kong movies, I love extreme violence, films. I love action films, and then this is kind of like, yeah, it's like someone that says, oh really, I like really spicy food, but they like, you know,
korma.
yeah And this is a steaming hot vindaloo. This is the real business.
Yeah,
you're separating the wheat from the chaff with this one, aren't you?
The people who have, what is it, lemon and herb at Nando's.
That's like, exactly it. Yeah, and this is definitely not that. And it's also really interesting to, like, if you were to, I know if you kind of say to someone you should really watch this movie, you're kind of like colouring their opinion, but I would say that Ricky O is a kind of a film that I hope people would discover without me telling them about it.
Right.
And then I would like to say, oh, what do you think of it? And if they say, oh, this film's terrible, it's rubbish, it makes no sense, it's ridiculous, over the top, then I know that they know nothing. And it's one of those tentpole movies that, like,
right,
okay, we can have different opinions.
It's a litmus test movie.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, we'll get along, but I'm not talking about films with you anymore.
Right, okay. It's a warning to you out there. I am going to say, now, I was kind of umming and ahhing about this, and I try and, obviously, look, to me, I'd happily watch this, you know, I had to put on something where I didn't really need to think very much and it would entertain me, this is the kind of film I would put on, absolutely. To most people, though, I don't know if they'd be able to look past the violence, so I would kind of give it a 4.
Yeah.
Because it's so violent. Like, I mean, various examples. I mean, by the end of this, you know, review, we're talking about, oh, you know, he just got his legs ripped off.
Yeah.
Or he only exploded. You know, it's fine. That's kind of the level we're talking about here.
The last, when we're saying about it being a disappointing death because they just exploded in a teeny tiny elevator.
Exactly.
I suppose you could argue that as a date movie, it works as a story of one man's undying love for his girlfriend who got abducted by a bunch of heroin addicts and ran off a building. And, you know, he's doing it all for her, even when the assistant warden threatens to molest the ghost of her.
He's still
not giving up.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess you might get away with it in that
regard. It's a love story.
Yeah, it's just a very, very, very violent love
story. It's got a beautiful scene where they're flying a model aeroplane and laughing a lot.
Exactly.
You know, you just have to look away for the other 89 minutes.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's not...
I'm stretching it, though, to be fair.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. It's not like a depressing film. And it's not a difficult film to watch, like... the last film that I talked about on the show, where it was an art house film and it's very difficult and it's quite dense. This is really the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah. It's like, yeah. So, but still very ridiculously violent. So, yeah, that's why I would give it a 4 out of 5, as I said. But, you know, hey, it might work as a date movie for some. Like with all these films, you know, it's all subjective. Whatever works for you and all that. Okay, so the version that myself and Scott watched is a Region 2 DVD. It's from a company called Hong Kong Legends. Very good quality DVD, good picture quality, excellent, all that kind of stuff. So if you want it just on DVD, that's and you live in Region 2. Also Region 2, there's a new version. It's a Blu-ray DVD dual format from a company called Medium Rare. And, yeah, as I said, that's available both Blu-ray and DVD. If you're in America, the best company to buy from Region A Blu-ray and Region Zero DVD is a company called Media Blasters. Again, from what I understand, that is the best version to own there. Cool. So I've been joined by Scott Priestley.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Absolutely awesome. Very, very fun show. If you've not done so already, please like, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, be it iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever. And if you have any ideas for any date movies that you would like me and my chums to discuss on the show, please hit me up on Twitter at @worstdatemovies. I try and post up content pretty much every day of movies that I think are pretty bad date movies. So if you're into that kind of thing, please follow me on there. And with that note, I will wish you all a very, very good day.